I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
What's up, everybody? This is episode number 83 of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about an article in North American Whitetail, the latest edition of that by James Kroll. We've covered some of his stuff before. I thought this was an interesting one, but we'll get into that on episode 83. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. Hey, Jeff Fry, Scott Clark, Kenya Clark here with you. Nate didn't make it again. He had to work late, had some other stuff going on, so basically, what I'm saying is he bailed on us. But
priorities.
Yeah. Like I mentioned in the intro, we're going to be talking about an article by James Kroll this week. So it's going to be like the old-fashioned early Ridge Hunter Outdoors podcast where we pulled articles all the time before we started having guests and all that. So this one will be a little bit
nostalgic.
Nostalgic.
Sure. Will it be kind of a throwback? But it's a good one, and it's kind of what we do. We have put videos up about this kind of stuff, and that's what we talked about on the podcast a lot. The article's called Managing Whitetails on Private Lands, and it's part one. He's going to do like a series, I guess, on the issues that come out this year, the North American Whitetail magazines that come out. He's going to have part two, three. I'm not sure if he says how many parts in here, but I'm going to skip around a little bit. So like I always say when we do these, if you can pick up the magazine, the digital print, the actual paper copy, go get it and read these articles. There's a lot of good information in them. We've talked to, I don't know how many of the writers now, at least a couple from the magazine. And they're in here. They've always got good articles and stuff too. It's kind of an old thing, seems like, but there's still a lot of good information in it. In this world of everything's on the internet and we get everything in 45 seconds, sometimes it's good to sit down and read a little bit of information that's actually, you know you can trust and is good instead of some Yahoo on Instagram reels or TikTok that's trying to tell you how to kill big bucks in 30 seconds. So, and he kind of mentions that in here as well, but
or some shady podcast.
Yeah, some, you know.
You'll have those now.
Yeah. I've heard of them. They're out there.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah.
Could be you.
Most likely.
I wouldn't say we're shady. It's a pretty well-lit studio. I do say so. Sometimes more lit than others.
Occasionally.
Yeah. All right. We'll just jump right in the article here. We'll talk about this, and then we'll probably get into some stuff like what we've got going on there at your place, what I got going on at the cabin, because I still haven't posted the video from the last time at your place, but it's coming, I promise.
The last time before this last time?
Yeah, but they don't know that.
Oh, okay. So there's two last times
they
that
do
you
now.
Haven't posted videos.
Yeah, I've got two in the queue.
Two in the queue.
Yes. All right, we'll jump into the article here. He says, in the 1980s at the Institute for Whitetail Deer Management and Research at Stephen F. Austin State University, my colleagues and I began working with landowners over the entire range of the species. We soon discovered there was one common trend among deer hunters. As they matured, they become more interested in doing something good for nature and their land rather than just killing bigger bucks, which I think we probably all have experienced or seen or have done ourselves. Most hunters want to leave a legacy, a hunting heritage for their family on land they hope will remain in the bloodline for many generations. And again, we're talking about private lands here, so we've done a ton of public land stuff recently. A lot of our guests are public land guys, but generally I think this is a pretty common theme among public land or private landowners. Like he says, the more they mature, maybe they kill some of those bucks and their priorities start to change about what they're wanting to do. And leaving that legacy like he's talking about. But we've talked about it before on the podcast. We're kind of at that point. Some of us come to it, I think, earlier than others, just depending on where you're hunting, maybe how long you've been doing it. If you just started hunting when you're 30, then obviously this isn't probably going to happen for a while. But we're not necessarily just wanting to kill big 180-inch bucks. Like, we're trying to have a healthy deer herd, grow the deer to as mature age as possible, and then harvest the mature deer. And I think that's kind of what he's talking about in the opening there, leading into this article.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other night after we got done at my plot. You know, and people were like, well, I don't know why you're worried about it and putting all this time and effort into it and stuff, you know, if you're not going to hunt it. Well, which I've said all along, that's not a hunting plot. It's a feeding plot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just something that's my way of giving back to nature. You know, we're supposed to be stewards of the land. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I'm giving back to nature and giving the deer what deer I've got on my property or surrounding properties stuff to eat. Not only the deer, but now since we've started doing this, before I never had rabbits. Now I got rabbits running amok in my backyard.
Yep. And squirrels.
And squirrels. and
them little son of a guns.
Mm-hmm.
Eating all your beans that came out.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I've had quail out there because of the switchgrass and stuff. And so it's not just the deer that I'm helping. You know, I'm providing a habitat for all sorts of different kinds of wildlife.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that we've even seen on properties that comes from managing for, you know, even just specifically for deer. If you're making the habitat better for them, providing food for them, then most of the wildlife is going to flourish in that, mm-hmm. in your area. I mean, you're going to start to see it at least, even if it's on your 20 acres, you know. And even, you know, you talk about the whole up and down the food chain, because if there's more rabbits, then there's more food for even the predators.
I'm getting predators showing up.
You
now.
Know, and then that's something as being stewards of the land we take care of too. Mm-hmm. But everything that you're doing for deer, it's helping all the wildlife out there, not just the deer.
Yeah, I mean, even in the winter, like with the corn and stuff, you know, it's helping the coons and the squirrels and mm-hmm. and even some birds and that, you know. So it's, I don't know if you call it a catch-22, but, you know, it's, you're helping,
mm-hmm.
you're just helping the habitat.
It's good for the land in general, being yep. that steward of the land like you're talking right. about, which I'd agree with you. I think we're supposed to do that. Jumping back in the article here, he says, thus, today I spend a lot of time consulting hunters on best management plans for their properties. And he goes on and he says, in the next part of this article, titled, Are You Managing Deer or Are You Managing Deer on Your Land? I've lost count of the number of times I have heard someone declare, we're managing our deer. Sure, that sounds good, but what does it mean? The Merriam-Webster Dictionary definition of manage is to handle or direct with a degree of skill, such as to exercise executive, administrative, and supervisory direction of. Another definition by the Oxford Dictionary is succeed in surviving or in attaining one's aims. So when we really examine what are you doing on your land, are you really managing deer? In order to answer yes, you've got to have clear goals and a plan. So yeah, that's something that
leaves me out.
I thought it was just taking care of something. Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. Basically, yes. In layman's terms, take care of it. But I think that's a good question he poses there is, are you actually managing your deer, or are you just going out there and shooting a couple every year, kind of throwing a dart at the wall and saying, okay, this year, we'll, if it lands on three does, we'll shoot three does this year. If it lands on, I'm just going to kill the biggest buck I see, I'm going to kill the biggest buck I see, not necessarily the most mature one, but I think that's a good intro into what he's getting ready to talk about. The meat of this is, are you really managing your deer, or are you just kind of hunting them?
And if you don't want to, then you don't want to.
Right.
Nothing says you have to manage your deer,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right. I mean, I just...
I mean, as long as you're not one of those guys that's complaining about not seeing big deer or not having the numbers around or anything like that.
Correct.
On your property. Correct. If you want to just go out there and shoot whatever, fine, do that. But I think if you want to have, like what we talked about in the beginning of this, that healthy population of deer, herd overall, and success year in and year out, and actually give back, then this is stuff that I think you should be doing, like at least striving to do, unless you just don't care, and then hopefully your neighbors are doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. wherever I go there around the house, I'm just looking for whether it's a mature doe or a mature buck. You know, and so I guess in that way you are possibly managing your herd.
I think that's the best way to manage your deer.
I mean, I'm not going out there expecting to shoot a 200-inch buck because mm-hmm. that's not very probable where right. I live at.
Right.
You know, but if I see a 5.5, 6.5-year-old buck, well then, you know, that's going to be my mm-hmm. target buck.
Yep.
Despite how big his antlers are or anything like that.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like what you're saying there too, is even though you're not necessarily wanting to go out there and kill the biggest, some record buck deer, record book buck, you're still
careful there.
You're still trying to manage your ground and the habitat to make it better for the deer. So I think even if you don't care about managing your deer or killing the biggest deer, if you have the land and, you know, you're trying to be a steward of it, because I think we should be stewards of it, because if we're not, then nothing else is.
Right.
I mean, the deer aren't going to take care of their stuff. We've talked about it before. Like, if there's too many of them, they'll literally eat themselves to death.
Well, Mother Nature will take care of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. But, so I think we do have some obligation or responsibility towards it, taking care of it. But we'll go back to the article here. Like he left off there, he said you have to have clear goals and plans. Often when asked, a landowner will say the goal is to grow bigger deer or to have more trophy deer. However, that is not a goal. It's an expectation. A properly stated goal would be something like, we want to harvest X number of mature bucks from this property each year, or we want to have a deer herd in balance with the productive capacity of our land, which is kind of what I just talked about, which how many deer can you actually hold or how many resources you got. But these are quantifiable goals that can be tested with time-proven metrics. You got to have a plan for what you're trying to do. I mean, otherwise you're going to run yourself in circles, and I think that's why we talk about taking notes a lot of times, what you're seeing during the season, and then literally write it down. That's why if we do a consultation or something like that, we'll give them the map and the document saying, this is your where we're trying to get to, and this is, you know, the steps you need to take to get there. Write it down and have a goal. That way you can realize it when you achieve it.
Right. I've seen one of the first steps to achieving a goal or success is to write your vision down. Mm-hmm. And that way, and put it someplace where you see it all the time.
Yeah, I think that's why it's cool when guys, like if we give them those maps or something and they blow them up and laminate them and put them on a wall in their hunting mm-hmm. cabin or whatever, or in the garage, and then you've always got that, like it's always in the front of your mind when you see it. Mm-hmm. You know, it may be one of those things that just becomes, you see it every day, so you don't really realize it, but it's still there.
Right.
It's that reminder that this is my goal. This is what I want to end up getting to. What do I need to do today to get to towards that goal? And obviously, it's not an everyday thing with your private land management, but what I need to do this month. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always something you can do every month that's going to help you achieve your land management goals and overall your deer management goals, at least in my opinion.
You could do that in your restroom, and it wouldn't be the only thing you ever blew up when you were in there.
How'd I know by the look on his face he was about to say something like that?
You ain't known him as long as I have. I already knew what was happening.
Uh-huh.
It's just where my mind, feeble mind, goes sometimes. When you talk about blowing up, I thought, well, Fry's blowed up plenty of stuff. That'd be the place to put it.
Well, you'd see it every day.
Yeah.
See, that's where I went.
I'm telling you.
Okay, well, hunting cabin, garage, bathroom, wherever you want to put it, at least you'll know it's there. Back to the article here. He says let me just read it. I have likened
good luck.
Deer management to a three-legged stool. I choose a three. Are you all right? No, he's not. He says, I have likened deer management to a three-legged stool. I chose. I'm going to have to pause this and come back. He says, I chose a three-legged stool because if you take one leg away, you're going to have a nasty fall. Why?
Well, he's not wrong. I hunt on three-legged stools. I mean, yeah.
That's a darn good one, too, but I couldn't find one this year at the show.
I know. We looked.
Yep.
Let me just back up.
Well, I don't know about that either.
Oh, good Lord. This is why we try not to. This is why I do the serious stuff on Fridays. Oh, so he says, I have likened deer management to a three-legged stool. I chose a three-legged stool because if you take one leg away, you're going to have a nasty fall. One leg of this stool is deer population management, another habitat management, and the last, people management. Finally got through that little paragraph. But I like what he says there because it's kind of simplified, but it's three parts that I tend to agree with. There's just population management, which I think overall is like your herd management, you could call it as well, because it's not just, I think if you say population management.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
There's been a lot of people are thinking, okay, I got to keep my numbers down, whereas maybe you're just trying to keep harvesting the mature deer, which would also fall into herd management. But there's that aspect of it. The habitat management, which we're going to get into, which we kind of talk about a little bit too. And that's one, again, where if you have one without the other, if you're just managing your habitat but you're not managing your deer herd, then you're not really helping your deer out any. You might be helping all that other wildlife, but you're not going to really help your deer herd, because if you're just growing bigger and bigger numbers of deer, in that numbers case, maybe you have to take some out. If you're not advancing those deer to the next age class, you're not going to help them get any bigger, stronger, have a healthier herd. So, and then the last one, people management, which is another big one. Obviously, you can't manage your neighbors, but maybe it's a deal where you try to go to your neighbors and talk to them and get everybody on the same plan. Or if it's everybody hunting the same property, everybody knows what your expectations are. I know you've had that, Jeff, and I kind of stole your idea for when I started hunting, like up there on the North Farm. We kind of followed the same rules, which was just an easy one. If you shoot it, you mount it kind of thing. Because at that time, even when we started hunting up there, I wasn't to the point where I was going to pass like a nice 3.5-year-old buck yet. But even as we've gone, with that rule, we have seen the age class of the bucks go up. And that's a big one, is the people management. Because if you got one guy that's shooting two and a half-year-old deer a year on your 160 acres or whatever it is, that's going to affect your deer herd over the years and the number of mature bucks you have.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest non-controllable factor out of the three, is you can't manage people on somebody else's property. So if you've only got, let's say, 10 acres, you can't manage that leg of the stool, for instance. You can manage yourself, you can manage your 10 acres, but that's certainly no ways near going to manage as the herd or anything like that. So that's a tough one in this area. Now, if you've got a ranch and you're guiding and you've got 2,000 acres, yeah, that's possible. But
you still have to do it.
Yeah, you have to, absolutely.
You still have to manage. Yeah, you still have to manage the people, you hunting your property and the people that are hunting your property. Because like we always say, if you're the guy that says, well, if I hadn't shot him, my neighbor would have, then you're that neighbor.
You also need to manage the amount of people hunting your property too, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I got 20 acres. Well, that's only going to hold about two of us at the most.
Yeah.
You know, we can't have...
On a good day where the wind's bright.
Yeah, we can't have six people hunting 20...
Exactly.
A 20-acre parcel.
Yep. You'd be hard having... I think it's something
I'd be hard having six trees they could put a stand in.
Yeah.
I know where he's going with it.
depending on the wind, and if you're after a particular deer, two is plenty.
Yes.
Two may be one too many most of the time, actually.
Yeah, actually it is.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think somewhere between 10 and 20 acres per hunter. But even then, if you start talking about six guys on 60 acres, especially depending on how that 60 acres is laid out, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of one of those things, like what you're talking about. Know your property and how it lays out and how many guys you can have hunting on at the same time. Know your wind, because you don't want to be a Bravo Foxtrot to your guy that's downwind of you when the deer are trying to come to him. But that's something, you're right, you have to manage the number of people. And that may not even just be at the same time. That could be like if you have eight guys in your hunt camp and you're hunting 100 acres, okay, you might only be hunting in there 3 days, but there's seven other guys that are hunting in there and either at the same time or not. That's a lot of intrusion.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to know how many people you can have hunting in there and what to expect based on that. even if it's not all hunting at the same time.
Which kind of may, it kind of full circles back to that other leg when you talk about managing the property, right? So if you've got seven or eight guys and six or seven guys in there, there may be some of that 60 or the 40 of that 60 acres, you can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't put stands on there. This is the area that we don't bother them. This is why we have those kind of deer. So you're managing the people along with.
Mm-hmm. That's actually something that we'll do a lot, or I've done a lot in the past on if we go do consultations and stuff, is just 10, 20 acres, whatever bigger the property is, however much room we can manage, to just is just sanctuary. Let them go, stay in there, bed in there, give them a little bit of browse so they feel comfortable. That way they're staying on your property more often.
Try and not to walk through there to check your cameras.
Right, right. And you're not bothering them. Maybe that's a place where you go set a camera up and it's a cell cam and you just leave it all year, or it's even if it's not. Yeah. You set one there just to see what's there, but you just leave it alone from like September through middle of January, February.
Yeah, when we go check my stand down south, that I'm planning on having a cell camera and setting it up then.
Mm-hmm.
That way I don't have to go down there every other week or whatever to pull the card and all that stuff. You know,
right.
I'm just staying out of it till I'm ready to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
We're getting also, too, like at my place, that's kind of what we do is that none of us hunt the center of the woods.
Right.
You know, we stay on the outer edges because we know that the center of the woods is where the deer's bedded and everything. Mm-hmm. And
which is an ideal setup.
You can't afford to blow them deer out of there.
Nope.
They won't be back for a month.
Yeah, if that. We'll get into more of this stuff, too, as he goes on, because he kind of breaks them down a little bit in the article. Continuing there, he says, let's begin with the population management leg of the stool. First, what is population? What is a population? It generally is defined as all the inhabitants of a particular area of a specific species. In other words, how many deer do you have? Well, that's a tough one. Since deer move around the landscape and do not remain on your land, at least for the average-sized property, the deer density question has plagued biologists since the beginning of wildlife management, and the truth is you never really know. You need to know something about the percentages of your herd that are does, bucks, and fawns, and you'll also have to have some measurements of the age structure of your herd. So that's kind of what we were talking about. When it comes to population management, that's why I think maybe herd management would be a better phrase for it. Is it's not just about how many deer you have, because that's going to be really tough to tell anyway, because especially when you're talking about does, you can tell the bucks that are in your area because they're all, unless they're just like some really similar 8-point or something like that, they generally have characteristics that, you know, are identifiable, and the individual buck will have one thing that another won't. But when it comes to does, you have no idea if you're looking at the same doe in a picture or not. So to me, if you see 30 deer out in a field of an evening, okay, you have a lot of deer in your area, right? If you're only seeing 10 on the regular, then maybe you have slightly less, you know what I mean? But when it comes to the other things he's talking about, I think it's really important. You can buy your trail cameras and buy your observation sits and even sitting and hunting, kind of figure out your buck-to-doe ratio. You can figure out your age structure within your herd. Even on does, you can generally tell, okay, what's a yearling doe versus a 2 to 4 year old doe versus a 6 to 8 year old doe. You know, it's going to be hard somewhere in the middle there, but you know a mature doe when you see one. They got the great big long snout on them.
Most of them, when they're that old, have characteristics like bucks do, as far as individual characters. I mean, we've watched them on your property, and you know, the old hunchback, or
I want to have the spot.
The spot. Yeah. I mean, so,
earmarks. Yeah, but
you're right. Until you get some age on them, it's tough.
Mm-hmm. But that's the stuff I think you need to know, especially like he says there, when it comes to your population management or herd management.
Well, there's a road that, actually, it's on the way to your cabin.
Mm-hmm.
But I take back from work every once in a while. And I went by there the other night, and it's maybe a 20-acre field of beans, and I count 35 deer out there in that field.
Yeah.
And I thought, holy smokes.
You know why? Because there's not any food around there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Well, it wasn't on that road. It was on the highway.
Oh, yeah. I know where you're talking about, I think.
Yeah, it's on the north side.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, I counted 35 deer out there when I went by. I thought, man, they need to start shooting some does.
Yeah.
Bad. Yep. Or that farmer's going to start shooting
some does. He's going to start doing something.
Somebody's going to shoot does.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, and then you go around my place, and you might see five.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's about right for that area around in there.
Yeah, yep. That's a big one, I think. He says population measurements also involve identifying causative mortality in your herd and identifying which are the greatest having the greatest impacts. This could be predation. In other areas, there may be significant mortality caused by diseases. One area we manage, and I thought this was just kind of interesting, one area we manage in Texas regularly loses 90% or more of the herd to anthrax. So you're probably not having that problem everywhere, but it is important to know what's killing your deer.
Well, that's what they get for living close to the border.
They should have taken vaccine. That, yeah.
That's, I'm not. No.
He didn't say what area of Texas. He just said one area. But to his point, if you're going to manage your population, it is important to know what's killing your deer, whether that be EHD on a really dry year.
Illegals coming across the border that are hungry.
Could be. Could be. Well, that's one.
Anthrax.
Or it could be however many coyotes you have killing all your fawns. Because if you have a lot of natural predation, then you don't need to kill as many deer, probably. If you don't have a bunch of natural predation, if there's not a lot of other things killing your deer, then you probably have a little more of that load to bear and kill more deer.
Yeah, Marley brought up a fawn that he'd found out in the woods. And I know he didn't kill it because it'd
been dead a while.
Been dead a while.
Yeah. But that's one I think gets overlooked. And really, just reading this article, I kind of thought about it. Like, you kind of think about it, but you don't realize you're thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people probably are missing that. But knowing what else is out there being taking your deer. And then kind of factoring that into your plan for your harvesting for that upcoming year.
I got a pretty good idea of what's getting my fawns because a neighbor showed me a video of a bobcat kitten just not too far from the house.
So. We've had some back there on camera.
Yeah. Well, I seen two while I was hunting last year back there.
Yeah. Yeah, they're getting...
I think you got one of them on camera, didn't you?
Yeah,
didn't
one
you
of
take
them on
a
my phone.
Video? That's what I meant. You got a video. Yeah. I said camera. But,
yeah, I seen five does and then a coyote come out behind them and then right at dusk a bobcat come out behind him, walked right under my tree. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't shoot at Tim. I do not have a permit.
So that's one of those things, though, that if you know you have bobcats, which we have a growing number in areas, pockets, especially in Illinois, that's something you got to take into consideration. Yeah. But he goes on to leg two, which is habitat management. He says, now let's talk about habitat. Deer must have the following habitat elements: summer thermal cover, winter thermal cover, escape cover, natural foods, and water. All of those things I don't think you necessarily need to have on your property, which he'll go on to. I'll just read this part before I get into that. He says, we learned long ago that the home range of most deer is elliptical in shape due to the fact that one or more critical habitat elements either are not on the property or are too far apart. Everything a deer needs 365 days a year should be in a reasonable travel distance to your deer. So that's a thing where, especially we talk about a lot, if you have 20 acres, if you have 10 acres, finding out what in that list of things he said there the deer don't have. And to me, summer thermal cover is one that I would not necessarily focus on if for hunting purposes, because it's not going to do you a lot of good in October if you have summer thermal cover. But if you don't, if there's not one of those other things that they need readily available in your block or in your neighborhood, then that's something you can capitalize on. Like you were just talking about with the cabin, the road to there, and I said there's not a lot of food there. I think that's something I can capitalize on. There's decent cover. There's water on the property. There's water all around there, but there's not a ton of food, so that's one I can key in on. Maybe it's cover. Maybe the deer don't have a lot of cover in whatever area you're in. Winter thermal cover. Mm-hmm. So maybe you go in and plant a cedar thicket. Maybe you do some switchgrass and some cedars mixed in, throw in some red maples for browse or something. But I think that's a big one when it comes to habitat management, is not just, okay, I saw some guy on the internet burning, or I saw some guy on the internet hinge cutting. I saw some guy on the internet planting giant miscanthus or switchgrass or whatever. It's, what can I do to the habitat that's going to benefit my deer herd? Not just what can I do to the habitat?
Elliptical.
Yeah, I don't know what
that is. Isn't that where the moon comes in front of the sun?
No, that's eclipsical.
Oh, okay.
You sound like George Bush. Eclipsicify.
Had me confused. God, first to have Bush back, right? Had me confused there for a minute.
Hey, Joe. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Anyways. And then the third leg, is the people management, which we kind of covered a lot there, but I'll read what he says here. He says, people would be managing your deer. Whether it be just you, your family, friends, employees, or contractors, to be successful, everyone will have to be committed to the management program and in solid agreement as to what the goal is and the steps needed to get there. So everybody's got to be on the same page, not only on what you're trying to get to, but how to get there. Because if you're all saying, everybody, it's easy to get everybody to agree, hey, we want bigger deer. How do we do that? We get more mature deer on the property. Okay, yeah, that's great. Everybody agrees. What you're going to have trouble with, I think, is getting everybody a degree on how to get to that point. So you got to, and it's like a lot of things, like we talked about somewhat on the last podcast, the nuance thing. There are a lot of different ways to skin a cat or to manage deer in this situation. As long as everybody's on the same page and practicing the same things, it may take longer than if you did it a different way, but if you're doing something that's working and everybody's doing it the same way, you don't have that one squeaky wheel or whatever, you're going to see success over a period of time. But it's getting everybody on the same page of how to get there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
It took us about 3 years or three hunting seasons to notice a difference, about four to five hunting seasons to actually see the results mm-hmm. of what we was doing down there on the program that, you know, we got started.
Right. And some of that's going to have to do with your deer herd, too. Because if you already have...
We had good genetics, and we had right. a good deer herd down there.
Yeah.
It's just they didn't have the opportunity to reach mm-hmm. their potential.
And if you have a herd that has, let's say, the bucks are average age at 3.5, now maybe it takes you 2 years to start seeing really the fruits of your labor versus if you have your average age is 1.5 or 2.5, mm-hmm. then it's going to take more time and how many you have and all that. But, yeah, I mean, that's... It's going to take time. I mean, yeah. Nothing happens instantly.
On your small properties, which most of us have around here, I think that's a great opportunity to get together with your neighbors. You know, have a cookout, have a barbecue. You know, if you don't have a deer camp with them, which a lot of people don't, but we're all hunting. We're all like-minded people for the most part. You know, maybe you throw that neighborhood party and cookout and, you know, whatever it is, and sit down around a campfire and throw out that conversation starter and see where it goes, and that helps you lead into what you're talking about there. It can't hurt anything. Even mm-hmm. if you go away disagreeing, at least you know where everybody's at, and you think, okay, you know, and you never know. You plant the seed and it grows, unless you're Jeff, and you never know.
We'll get into that later.
I mean, if you don't try, it's never going to happen.
Yep.
Yeah, no, you can't be, I mean, you can be. It's probably not going to work real pushy about it, I don't think. You can't go to your neighbors and be like, hey, by God, this is what we're doing, and this is why we're doing it, and you're going to do it.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Why you have the cookout.
That's what I'm saying.
Needs to be a cooler. Suggestion.
Yeah. Let the conversation happen kind of naturally and be...
Let them chew on it.
You might find out you're all in agreement about the big bucks, and mm-hmm. then you have that conversation of how do we get there. Mm-hmm. Whether you agree or not, you might find some common ground that maybe does help everybody.
Yep. And like you said, just plant the seed to get the wheels turning on it, and maybe... Even if it's 2 years down the road, they finally decide, hey, I've been trying this for the last 2 years, and he's over there doing this, and he's killing a decent buck, you know, every year. Or at least a couple years ago, or this year he killed one, and I haven't even seen him. What's different? Maybe I should try that. And then at least that's 2 years, you know, versus maybe it's 10 years down the road. If you plant that seed early, maybe in a couple years versus 10 that,
yeah, and you have four neighbors, one on all sides, theoretically, right? So if you all get together and have a cookout or whatever, and two of you agree and two mm-hmm. of you don't, you're still twice as better off as you was when you started.
Yep.
And those two that aren't in agreement with you might see you and whoever you are in agreement with killing those bigger deer and thinking, you know what, maybe we can. And even if you don't agree, hell, next year, come around, have another deer camp, have another mm-hmm. cookout, have another fish fry, whatever it is, get together and... And as sportsmen, you'll find something in common, even if, you know, I want to mm-hmm. kill a spike buck and Jeff doesn't want to kill anything till it's six, that doesn't mean we don't enjoy hunting.
Yep.
We can still have a joyful conversation about hunting and mm-hmm. nature and whatever else.
And even if he is that
God knows whatever.
Even if he is that guy killing the spike buck and saying, man, I wish we had more mature deer, just don't be a jackass to him and say, well, if you weren't killing those spike bucks, you know, we'd have more big mature ones. Again, just put it in their mind that, hey, you know, this is what we've been doing. He said, I saw, you know, a few spikes or two-year-olds this year, and I just decided I didn't want to shoot them. And it's kind of worked for us. You know, you just got to – there's a way to go about it, and there's a wrong way. And I think maybe sometimes we get a little too hard-headed, and we're all guilty of it from time to time. But just don't be a jerk to them if they aren't following what you're wanting to do, like you said.
My famous saying is baby steps.
Yeah.
And take baby steps and get to where you want to be.
Go back the next year and try it again, like you're saying. That's a big one, I think, people management. Because if you can get – maybe you only have 10 acres, or maybe you have 100 and your neighbors have 40 on each side of you. Now you've got 260 that are being managed instead of just 100. Maybe if you have the 10 and your neighbors has 150, 160, now you've got 170 that are being managed. And that's a huge part of that. I think if one leg of that stool is maybe a little sturdier than another, that's probably a big one. Because if you do the other things, you can manage your deer and not manage your habitat and still kill some decent deer every now and then. You can manage your habitat and not necessarily manage your deer and still kill some decent deer every now and then. If you do both of those things, but everybody around you is killing 2.5-year-old deer every year, it's going to be tough to kill nice deer, even on a non-consistent basis. You're just going to have to get really lucky.
But someone has to do it. Someone has to start.
Yep. You got to be the guy that starts, but I think that's a big one if you can get try to get people on board, and you got to be on board with it first. Even if it's just something where maybe your neighbor doesn't even want to talk to you or have that cookout, at least you're the one, you do it and stick to what you're saying you're going to do, and then, okay, now you're posting on Facebook or whatever, and they see you doing that, or they see you leaving the property with that big mature buck hanging out of the tailgate, because you know it's illegal to haul one with the tailgate closed if he's over 120 inches.
No question about that.
So, maybe they just see that, and that's what gets the wheels turning in their head.
I can't believe our neighbor up there wouldn't talk to us. I mean, he waves us with the one finger all the time.
I know. I think he's gone. I haven't seen him in a long time. He doesn't hunt anyway, so. And maybe that's another thing.
Legally.
Maybe that's – well, that wouldn't – I don't know if you call that hunting or not. But maybe that's another thing. Even if your neighbors don't hunt, these are conversations you could have with them. Maybe you go get permission to hunt their property and either hunt it or don't. And then you don't get somebody like that's coming in there and doing it. Or say, hey, if you have somebody that wants to come hunt this, would you mind me talking to them? And, you know, this is what I'm doing. I think it's good for the environment and the habitat, the deer, the wildlife. Environment's not really the word I was looking for, no. But wildlife. So it might get them on board with it. We'll save that for another time. But he goes on, I'll finish this one here. This will be the last part of this article we'll get into. And this is one that I think we try to be cognizant,
I ain't got no change.
Aware.
aware of.
Jeff when ain't we, got no change.
Yeah, I ain't when got no
we,
change. Careful.
When we do consultations or talk to people, and I think it's, we'll still go to a property and say, hey, look, this is how you can make it better. But we'll also take this into consideration as where you might want to start and build towards. It says, one category of information you need for a sound management plan revolves around the potential physical and economic limitations to the program. For instance, I learned the hard way that's one thing to recommend prescribed burning, yet quite another to see the landowner actually pull off a burn. Further, what are the equipment limitations on your management program? Do you even own a tractor? How much will you manage? How much will management practices cost, and do you have the funds to support them?
Does it have all four wheels?
Exactly. Yes, it may be best to use a no-till
Georgia trailer.
It may be best to use a no-till drill to plant food plots, but do you have the upwards of $20,000 to obtain one and a tractor to pull it? So that's something you got to keep in mind too: is what are your resources, both. Economically especially, and then time resources as well, what can you do? And that's not to say, like I said, even when we do consultations, I'll say, here's, you know, what I see and what I think you could do to improve your deer management, your wildlife, and the habitat. It's not to say you don't want to do these things because it's cost prohibitive right now, But maybe you start with these things, and then you get the ball rolling, and then maybe down the road you can't afford to do those, or you got a buddy that has a tractor, and he can come help you out with it, or you can rent something down the road, something like that. But pick the ones that you can get done and just start there.
I think that's one of the biggest disservices that TV programs today do is they show all these food plots and they show all this thing, and they they don't explain, this cost me $30,000 a year to maintain. Mm-hmm. You have had clients that they have a budget, which we all do, and they don't understand. You can't get a $30,000 food plot on a $3,000 budget.
Right.
But nobody on TV says that. Says, hey, this is what we're doing. But it costs X amount of dollars. And the expectations, I think that's a huge disservice that the industry does to Joe Hunter out here. That, oh, yeah, you can have a food plot. Yeah, it looks great, blah, blah, blah. And it's...
That's one thing I can't appreciate about, like, the Drurys, like Forrest and them. Is they will show, they're not going to come out and say, hey, we spent this dollar amount. But they do in a lot of their episodes or even on their YouTube channel provide content that shows, and the Midwest Whitetail guys do kind of the same thing, especially on their YouTube, well, I guess they're, I think, on their YouTube channel anyway. They're probably on the Outdoor channel too. Anyhow, they at least show the work that goes into it, and they show the equipment they're using and the seed that they're putting down and the old fire truck that Terry's got that they try to water their food plots with. So at least that pulls the curtain back and, okay, this is all the time and then money, you know, in relation to that it does take. But you're right, there's so many of them that don't show anything like that. And it's just, here comes the fall, we're up in a tree over this $30,000 food plot, and you can do this too on a $1,500 budget as long as you buy our seed.
Let me know how it works out. Yeah,
exactly. I just think it's a huge disservice the industry does. Mm-hmm. And I understand it. I mean, if you're going to be on TV and you want that $30,000 food plot, I get all that. But go that extra step and say, yes, we have this, mm-hmm. but this is what it takes to get it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to do this. You don't have to spend this kind of money, but this is what you're going to get. You can't buy an Escalade for $5,000,
right?
Unless it's getting ready to go to the junk pile, yeah. Right?
Yep.
Can you own an Escalade? Sure you can. You can't own a new one for $5,000.
Yep. That's all I had out of the article from James Kroll, Dr. James Kroll from North American Whitetail, this one being the June edition. Like I said, I skipped around a bunch and skipped over a bunch of stuff in there. So go get it and read the article if you haven't. I always encourage everybody to do that because there's stuff in there that maybe you'll pick up on too, and other good information in it that we just, I don't want to read the whole article word for word, so I like to add our own stuff in. But speaking of budget food plots, we've hit a bit of a snafu on yours, and I wouldn't say it's so much a snafu because everybody's kind of dealing with it right now.
Yeah.
But this drought's just killed the corn at your place.
Yeah, and the beans. I mean,
yeah, they're hurting too.
The beans come up. And then they stopped growing, and then the rabbits and the deer found them, and they just went down each row and nubbed them down to dirt, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the sorghum's doing a lot better than I expected, but it's a drought-tolerant
mm-hmm.
Plant anyways. But the corn, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. And this next video that goes up will be some mowing of the clover one time ago, and then the planting of it. So you guys will get to see how we did everything. And, I mean, we did it as good as we knew how to.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one we'll do will be a little more about where we're at now and what it kind of looks like and what we're talking about with the drought and all that. But
yeah, I mean, it's, you can do everything right, but some things are out of your control, you know. And so...
Mm-hmm.
You need to get a couple feathers and your moccasins out and do a little rain dance.
Yeah, well.
You need to tell your neighbor to do that.
My neighbor?
Yeah. Well, Jeff's not a real Indian.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I never thought of that.
Yeah. You should try. That's also to the expectation thing, though, is
even not if sure you, how much Indian she's had in her either.
Well, even if you do.
I got her on the side.
Even if you do put the money into it and the time and do everything by the book, you still cannot control Mother Nature.
Right.
I mean, and even if you have a fire truck like the Drury's had last year, if you
know
look
how
at,
much water, how many gallons of water it takes to make an inch of rain on an acre.
I mean, you have to do it daily and put a bunch of water on it. And they did that last year, and it's like 27,000 gallons or something right?
Like that.
On an acre.
Yeah.
But anyway, they did that last year and put all that time and effort into it. And if you go back and watch their hunts from last year, their food plots still didn't look that great because it just didn't get rain. And like you said, you can't make up for it. So even if you do put everything into it that you're supposed to, sometimes if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And last fall was that way, and this spring's looking that way. So hopefully at least this fall we'll get more rain than we did last year. If not, the other problem is we might have some EHD and a pretty big kill this year.
You are correct, sir. 27,000 gallons of water. That's what I thought. Give you an inch over an acre.
Mm-hmm. So if you're, I mean, I don't know what they're watering, but, I mean, you got to be out there putting thousands of gallons on it every day to make an inch of rain over a week.
Right.
Which is not going to make that much difference. It might make a difference in it being dead and not, like theirs, for instance, but it's still not going to be anything spectacular. So
you can't haul 27,000 gallons of water on a four-wheeler and a backpack sprayer.
Right.
Yeah.
For it to matter.
No, you're just not going to make that difference. So that's what I was going back to your expectations is you can't control Mother Nature and the rain and all that. But
no, because just like the other night, you know, we went in there and had your Harold behind the four-wheeler and was tearing up what dirt we could and throwing some, we gave up on the corn, so we was throwing some conceal down.
Mm-hmm.
It was giving 75% chance of rain that night. I didn't get a drop.
We didn't get a drop.
Not one. Nope. Not one stink. I didn't even get a good dew.
Right.
You know, it's just so. Mm-hmm. And so now all that stuff's just laying there in dry dirt waiting for something to happen. And
yep. That's what I did at the cabin, too, when I went and I put the nitrogen on the Milo there and I put buckwheat down on both those plots.
Did you do it at the five-leaf stage?
Some of it. Some of it's bigger than that. Some of it's not quite there yet. So anyway.
Average.
Yeah. Anyway, I put all that down in the buckwheat, expecting that 70% chance of rain to come through and nothing.
Yeah.
It's just the way it goes.
Yep.
But
then if we hadn't have done anything, we've got 2 inches of rain.
That's how it went last fall, it seemed like. Yeah. When we got rain, they weren't calling for it. When they were calling for it, we didn't get it. So it seems to be similar this spring. But anyway, that's kind of where we are on the food plots.
Yeah, it's just like that parcel of ground down there.
Mm-hmm.
South that I hunt, I haven't done nothing to it except just spray it.
Right.
And actually, I need to go spray it again because, you know, it's just, what's the point? You ain't going.
At this point, you might as well wait till the fall.
Right. You're just throwing seed and money out there for the birds to pick up. Yeah. You know, I mean.
Yep. I think maybe the thing to do there this fall would be to plant some of that inner sanctum like what Nate had in his sprout patch last year. That way, that kale will at least come up and be pretty tall this fall, and then you'll have a good start for your clover for next year, because that's the ultimate goal there anyway, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, because I think it's mostly kale and clover. It's got a little bit of that triticale in it, but I think that may be your best bet at this point.
Yeah.
Speaking of Nate, I was hoping he'd be here tonight because I want to talk to him about if he's got started on anything, and I don't think he has because we're supposed to do some videos, but on his plot and all that. But maybe we'll get to talk to him next week about it. And this is coming out a day late as well. We're actually recording this on Monday when it's supposed to come out. So apologies for that. Just the way the schedule went this weekend, some things got moved around. So anyway, anybody else got anything they want to add before we get out of here? Well, speaking of Inner Sanctum, you've heard us talk about it. And like I said, Nate's sprout patch turned out great last year. We all saw the pictures of it. And I used it on some client properties as well, and it went it grew really well, and it actually used that on Chris's property up there, the Inner Sanctum, because he eventually wanted clover, but we did some fall stuff with some clover in it. That way he had something for the first year. Clover's established for this spring going on into this year, and it's looking really good. So, but that Inner Sanctum comes from Grandpa Ray Outdoors. If you guys don't know about them, they specialize in providing the best nutrition for white-tailed deer on your property, starting with the soil. They've got a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods. They were started in 2015, but John's been in the business since 1991. We've talked to him a couple times. Super knowledgeable guy. really knows his stuff when it comes to food plots and whitetail nutrition overall. They've got over 14 different food plot blends to choose from, so you're not going to have any trouble finding what you're looking for. They have fall and spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it, they've got it. They're not just about selling their products, though. They're going to answer any questions you have about what blends would be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. Like us, John and his team don't believe in a cookie-cutter approach to wildlife nutrition. They're going to treat you and your situation individually. They aren't about a fancy label or package either. They're just about good quality seed and taking care of their clients. Like I said, we've used their blends on our own properties, on clients' properties, client properties all over the Midwest. That's why, and the results have always been as good as advertised. And that's why we're going to continue to use their seed. And that's why we actually partnered with them on the podcast in the first place. So if you guys want to support us and your deer herd and get some of the best seed on the market, you can go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com and use the discount code RHOPODCAST. It's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your order there. Our other sponsor for the podcast, if you guys haven't been listening, is Rodney Hawkins. So if you're looking for your own ground that you want to make your private land that you can manage and hunt, and you're getting to that point where you want to leave behind something for family members or whatever it is, just better than you found it.
Hawkins, is that an Indian name?
No, Hawk's probably somewhere in there. But
I was thinking maybe he might know a rain dance or something.
Probably not.
At this point, I don't care who knows a rain dance. Yeah,
somebody needs to do
his younger brother might.
Yeah.
Yep. And if you're looking for your ground that you want to manage or hunt, Rodney's the guy to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors and selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. And Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They sold over $85 million worth of ground in 2022 alone. They've got agents like Rodney all over Illinois. They're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. Rodney's also got his own business called RG Outdoors. They're currently carrying blinds and blind chairs all from Radix Blinds, in addition to camo dust, which is an all-natural scent elimination product. They've also got burner self-defense weapons now and Tacticam trail cameras. If you're interested in anything they have to offer or anything new they might be getting, because he's all the time working on new stuff, getting new stuff in the store, you can message them through their Facebook page, RG Outdoors. Email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com. Or again, you can call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. Don't forget about our social media. You guys can follow us at Ridge Hunter Outdoors on Facebook and Instagram. Our Facebook group now for the listeners is RHO Podcast Patrons, so you'll see some exclusive content on there. And also, like today, since this is coming out late, I kind of put up there that just letting everybody know the podcast will be out tomorrow, which will be Tuesday, which is today when you're listening to this. Anyway, that's where you can find all of that stuff. We'll also ask...
Sir,
what was that?
I say you're starting to sound like Kamala Harris.
No, sir. I'm not talking in circles yet.
Yesterday was today, but this today, yesterday. And
yeah. So if you guys want, check that out. You can ask questions on there. We'll ask questions from you guys sometimes, and then we'll put the guest up when we can that we're going to have on. So if you want to ask them any questions, you can do that as well. Also, our website, RichHunterOutdoors.com. If you see anything on there you like, use the discount code RHOPOD for 10% off your entire order. Follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave us reviews on both of those. That really helps us out. And then our YouTube channel. Subscribe to that, like, and comment on any of the videos. We got some new ones coming out soon. I think I've said that for the last week now. But it's coming out soon. Jeff's property vlog will be coming out. And then I think I have one ready for the cabin as well. But that'll all be on the YouTube channel. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And hopefully this fall we'll have some more hunting content for you guys there. If nothing else, it'll be like it was last fall, which... hopefully it was interesting, and you guys got to keep up with what we were kind of had going on. So that's all we got for this week. Appreciate you guys tuning in and listening. We'll catch you again on the Full Draw Friday episode, and then we'll see who we can get in here for next week's episode. But thanks for listening.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.